In a world where investors seek to make $1 million, how do they do it? By starting with $10 million and investing in financial stocks, of course. Bad. Money Machine. Show 126. Friday, September 6th.
Hello, everybody. This is Paul Douglas Boyer. Welcome to the Mad Money Machine. Thank you for downloading this show onto your iPod, your iPhone, your Zune, your computer, and to your non-branded MP3 players. Yes, the world mourns the passing of Don LaFontaine, the announcer for so many movie trailers that began in a world. He has the unique voice that can never be replaced. The Mad Money Machine is proud to be sponsored by Index Funds Advisors. Check them out on your iPhone at ifamobile.com. You'll never be without Index Funds Advisors as long as you have an iPhone and ifamobile.com. Have you been watching all the political theater that's been taking place over the past couple of weeks? Now, I know I've made a pledge to myself not to follow politics. And I just can't help myself for some reason. I watched Barack Obama speak. I didn't watch Joe Biden speak. But I did watch Sarah Palin's speech on the internet. And I watched John McCain's speech. Oh, and I watched Ron Paul's speech at his rally for the Republic. And some of the other guys that were speaking at his rally. And it was all very interesting. They all have very good speech writers. They all make very good points. I have to say, I really like it when, no matter which one of them they are, when they talk about reducing the size of government as if that was ever going to happen. But it sure is a good idea, isn't it? It's just unnatural when one entity has a monopoly over everything else. And that's the problem I have. Just like this email I got from eBay. Says, "Dear Paul, as a savvy online shopper, you know the internet is the best place to find great products at great prices." And blah, blah, blah. And so they say, "So who wouldn't love finding a great deal on eBay?" The answer, big retail stores. They don't like the competition. And now retailers are trying to undermine the ability of small business competitors to use the internet and eBay to offer great values to savvy buyers like you. They complain, eBay is sending this email out to complain against the retail industry lobbying politicians for new laws that unfairly accuse competitively priced products online of being, quote, stolen goods. They say no internet company is more committed to fighting online fraud and crime than eBay. This debate is not about crime, it's about competition. Now, don't you just hate it when the lobbyists have their way with the government and the government writes regulations that create a virtual monopoly? So one of the brochures I took home from my trip to the Philadelphia Federal Reserve Bank, Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia, was a brochure entitled Symbols on Money. And one of the symbols that I'm sure you're familiar with on the back of a $1 bill is the half-finished pyramid and the eye of providence that's seen floating above on the back of the $1 bill. Well, you know, that picture there is actually the reverse of the Great Seal of the United States. And that eye is called the eye of providence, the all-seeing eye. It's a symbol showing an eye surrounded by rays of light, usually enclosed by a triangle. It's sometimes interpreted as representing the eye of God, keeping watch on humankind. The symbol's been around a while. It first appeared in the West during the 17th and 18th centuries. But representations of an all-seeing eye can be traced back to Egyptian mythology and the eye of Horus. The eye, as part of the Great Seal, was first suggested as an element by three design committees in 1776 On the seal, the eye is surrounded by the words Annuit Septis, meaning he approves or has approved our undertakings. And underneath it, it says Novus Ordo Seclorum, meaning new order of the ages. And the lowest level of the pyramid shows the year 1776 in Roman numerals. Now, on the pyramid itself, there are 13 layers, representing, of course, the original 13 colonies. The combined implication is that the I, or God, favors the prosperity of the United States. I have a very special request for you, listener. If you like the Mad Money Machine show, I'd ask you to do something starting on September 15th. On September 15th are when nominations go in to Podcast Awards at podcastawards.com for Best Podcasts. And if you would, I'd ask you, would you please nominate the Mad Money Machine in the business category of podcasts there? Getting nominated will really help me out. I thank you for your support. So one of my Google Alerts hits on index funds came up with this posting out at some website. Four reasons why index investing may not be for you. And this guy, his reason number one is there's no downside protection. For indexers who are mostly equities over the past year, it's more likely that your portfolio has had some wild swings and is very volatile. The great thing about indexing is that when the markets go up, the herd follows. However, the herd is also forced to follow when the markets tank. Well, number two is no control over your holdings. The index investor is at the mercy of whatever stocks that are the largest in any particular market. This can potentially lead to overpriced stocks having a larger weighting on the index. Does anyone remember when Nortel was the largest stock on the TSX? Number three, an indexed portfolio will always be average. Never better, never worse. If you're like me, your aim is to beat the market, not just float with it. Even though very few investors beat the market, an index investor will never do so. Even though the markets are generally efficient, there are always stocks out there that are oversold and underpriced relative to their financial fundamentals. These stocks usually come roaring back much quicker than the index once the market realizes the pricing error. And number four, the one appropriate to this show, is it's boring. This is probably the weaker of all the arguments, but it's true. Index investing is boring. If you're the type that revels in digging in research, watching the markets, and investing when you think the time is right, then index investing is not for you. With index investing, you set it and forget it, making very few changes on an annual basis. Well, let me just address a couple of these. No downside protection. Yeah, but how do you know if you're an active investor when the bottom hits, you know, and you get back in? It's just a crazy argument. You don't know when the markets are going to go back up or when they're going to continue going down. So it's better to just stay in the market and not to sell your stocks and take capital gains, which puts you even further behind. Second one, no control over your holdings. Well, you know, if you invest in some of the small cap and value indexes, you actually do have control over your earnings and you are buying stocks that are priced lower relative to the market. You're buying higher book to market stocks. And as far as number three, your index portfolio will always be average. Well, market returns are superior returns. You remember that? And I thought there was an interesting comment on this website. Some person wrote in, and they said, I agree, there are lots of other reasons not to like index investing. Number five, no money manager to blame when your investment loses money. Number six, all those compounding capital gains cost you lots of capital gains tax when you finally sell. And number seven, indexing earns so much money in the long run that eventually they push you into a higher tax bracket. Got an email from Stacy regarding the last show. You remember a caller that called in and said there was a podcast by Frank Curzio at thestreet.com? Well, Stacy writes, Paul, greetings. Let me start by saying I really enjoy your podcast. I never miss it and especially appreciate the guy next door content. Stacy continues, Your background music is a riot. Now, to get to my point, you chose to highlight a caller who complained about Frank Curzio's podcast and his flip-flopping. I consider myself to be an intelligent and discerning consumer of investment and trading media. I never miss Frank's podcast. He's been consistent in his take on the market as long as I have listened to him. He's cautioned his listeners almost daily on the financials and is very clear on the stocks he comments on. Your listener's complaint is way off the mark. I have no idea what he's basing his comments on. Frank brings on first-rate guests and discusses sectors, stocks, and the overall economy with clarity and honesty. While I don't base any of my trading ideas on his commentary, I certainly have a better and more thorough understanding of the bigger picture by listening to his show. I would urge you to do your due diligence before allowing negative commentary on one of your peers. Frank has a top-quality podcast and deserves better. Best regards, Stacy, Mr. Stacy, that is, and he gives his last name. Well, thank you, Stacy, for emailing me that correction. I have still not listened to Frank Curzio, although I've put it in my podcast list. I still like Thomas Jefferson's quote that I mentioned on the last show. But I'll listen to it. You know, the one show that I do like to listen to is the Bloomberg on the economy with Tom Keen, I think it is. Wow, the guy asks really good questions of his guests. And I try to listen to just, there are a lot of them that come out. Sometimes two in a day come out and you don't get them all on your iTunes. You have to go back and download them on purpose, but they're usually very interesting to listen to. And the economists, you know, they usually have a prediction about what's going to happen, and you have to take all these predictions with a grain of salt. But sometimes they have background about what has happened and why they think it has happened, and you know you have to take some of that with a grain of salt too. But it does help educate us on what is going on in the economy, for good or for bad. Sometimes I just wonder if buying and holding and going off and doing something else like making pottery might be a better avocation. But thanks for the email, Stacy. I'll have a listen to Frank Curzio's podcast. In today's Learning Earning segment, where we learn how to earn our financial freedom, sponsored by Index Funds Advisors, we're going to take a look at tax loss harvesting. It's a great time to start thinking about tax loss harvesting when your stocks have all gone down so much as they have. The material in this segment is provided by Index Funds Advisors at their website, ifa.com, and in the book Index Funds, the 12-step program for active investors by Mark Hebner. Well, in addition to rebalancing, taxable investors should also consider a tax savings tool called tax loss harvesting. A market downturn provides you with an opportunity to examine your specific situation and to identify whether you can save on a future portion of ordinary income and on capital gains taxes that are generated each year due to distributions from your mutual funds or rebalancing of your portfolio or the sale of funds for your cash needs. Each year, taxable accounts will generate some capital gains. For many investors, tax gain or loss harvesting is the single most important area for reducing taxes now and in the future. Because of the tax offset value of realized capital losses, you should consider the following strategy after stock markets have experienced a decline. And I'm going to go through four things here that you should consider. Number one, sell those index funds in your taxable accounts that have declined in value by approximately 10% and have a minimum capital loss of about $10,000 based on your average cost basis. This sale will create a realized short-term capital gain loss on the sold funds held for less than 12 months and a long-term capital loss on sold funds held more than 12 months. All right, number two. Then, immediately invest the proceeds of the sale into a substantially different broad market index fund, such as the S&P 500, if you're not selling the S&P 500, Since the exact value of proceeds will not be known until the close of the market, most of the proceeds will be invested the same day, and a small portion will be invested in the next trading day. Okay, we want to stay invested in the market because we don't know when it's going to start going back up, and you don't want to miss out on opportunity costs there. Number three, purchase the original funds back on or after 31 days. That's an important number, 31 days from the sale of the original funds. The 31-day period avoids the IRS wash sale rule. And they've got a link to this rule in their notes, which I'll have a link to on the website. The IRS wash sale rule states that a wash sale occurs when you sell or trade stock or securities at a loss, and within 30 days before or after the sale, you, one, buy it back or acquire substantially identical stock, or acquire a contract or option to buy substantially identical stocks. Or if you sell your stock and your spouse or corporation you control buys a substantially identical stock, you also have a wash sale. And if you buy substantially identical stock in your IRA, you also have a wash sale. And number four, report the realized capital losses to your accountant to offset future capital gains and a portion of your income, reducing future tax bills. Now remember, tax loss harvesting is not market timing. See, by transferring the money into another index fund or exchange-traded fund, you can remain 100% invested in the broad market index that is not a substantially identical stock or security. While tax loss harvesting is a valuable tool, there are some risks associated with it. And before you do it, I encourage you to go to the website, show notes for one show 126, and click on the link to read more about tax loss harvesting and evaluate the risks that might befall you if you should undertake this strategy. It can definitely be worth it because it could save you a lot of money.
Of course, many of you don't want to fool with this nonsense of accounting for all this stuff, so here's what I would advise you to do. Go get an account with Index Funds Advisors and let them help you manage your financial freedom.
Got a question on show 125 from three different people, if you remember, on how to do it yourself, how to invest in index portfolios 5 through 100 by using Vanguard funds, for example, or perhaps iShares exchange-traded funds. Well, here's another way to get to the information. If you go to the IFA.com website, up at the top of the page, click on one of those 20-numbered portfolios, 5 to 100. Let's say, for example, you feel like your risk capacity is at about a 60. Click on the number 60, and that page will come up, the index portfolio 60, green. And now under all those numbers, you'll see quite a few green tabs, starting with index data and rolling periods and top 10 holdings. You know, these are all fun to look at. But there's one there in the middle to the right, Diversified Index Managers. And if you click on that link, it will show you the composition of Index Portfolio 60, the percentage of each one of the asset classes in there. It'll show you which of the Dimensional Funds Advisors funds is used by IFA to make up that portfolio. Ah, but it also shows you a representative Vanguard fund that could be used to make up that portfolio as well. For example, in the large cap asset allocation, they select Vanguard 500 Index Fund or the Vanguard Value Index, the ETF, or VIVAX, their mutual fund. And in the small cap, they look at the Vanguard Small Cap Index, either VB or NAESX. The real estate fund is the Vanguard REIT, VNQ, or VG6, VGSIX. International fund, they look at the iShares EFA Value ETF, for ticker symbol EFV. The emerging market fund, of course, is the Vanguard Emerging Markets, VWO, or their mutual fund, VEIEX. And I don't see one under the fixed income at the moment, but I know Vanguard has a total bond market fund that might fit you there. Just some more help to get you started down the road of do-it-yourself index investing. Also want to mention one more thing that's exciting that's going on at IFA, and that is they're going to have a live online workshop. And topic one is going to be very interesting, how to invest for recessions and volatile markets. They say that this session will review the impact of recessions and volatile markets on investment results and discuss critical considerations for investors, both in retirement or in their accumulation phase. I hope you're listening to the show soon after it's released, because the date for that online presentation is going to be September the 10th at 3 p.m. Pacific time. Of course, that's 6 p.m. Eastern time. Seats are unlimited, so definitely get there. Let's have a look at the Portfolio Smackdown through the end of August. Of course, the few days just after August was when the market went down something like, 3%? So your results may vary, but go to MadMenMachine.com website, click on Lazy Portfolio Smackdown. And of the professional lazy portfolios, the Harry Brown Permanent Portfolio is at the top, being down only 1.5% year-to-date. Scott Burns Couch Potatoes down only 2.5%, and the Scott Burns Five-Fold Portfolio is down only 4.1%. His Six Ways from Sunday down 4.6%. The Bill Schulte's Coffeehouse Portfolio is in fourth place, down only 4.3%. And the worst of the mutual fund portfolios there is the Wisdom Tree Portfolio, down 15.1% year-to-date. The game entries of the individual Lazy Portfolio Smackdown: Mud Fudd is back at the top, 15.1% gain for the year. Tex Williams, a gain of 4.6%. And Cosmo is positive with 2.4%. Bringing up the rear, Pete B, down 16.4%. Good luck in the rest of the year, guys. The FDIC bank fail count is 6. I want to thank you faithful listeners and new listeners alike for downloading the Mad Money Machine. This is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes knowing how to make $1 million to make a Mad Money Machine. I'll see you next Friday, September the 12th. In the meantime, do visit our sponsor, Index Funds Advisors, at IFA.com, helping investors succeed by matching people with portfolios. Some of the music on this program provided by music.podshow.com. I encourage you to give me your feedback. Whether it's a question, a complaint, a comment, or a criticism, you can email it to me at feedback@madmoneymachine.com or call the voicemail line 206-734-4763. Catch my occasional postings at twitter.com/madmoneymachine and visit the website madmoneymachine.com. I'll see you next Friday.